Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for the Friday show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. We're in the studios with our regular guest, Dr. Patrick Ludke, Senior Public Health Officer with Lane County. And we have Tony Skirto here. He's the Superintendent of Lane Education Service District, otherwise known as Lane ESD. Thanks to both of us for being here today.
Great to be here.
Thanks. Great to be here also.
Well, Governor Brown announced today that the state will be able to speed up vaccine distribution because of an increase in supply, and seniors are supposed to be able to start getting vaccinated as soon as next week. Dr. Ludke, can you update us on the coronavirus numbers in Lane County and where we're at with vaccine distribution?
Well, I'm happy to do that. And there's a little bit of good news out there. I know that longtime listeners are aware that we have had a thousand new cases every 13 days in Lane County for the last 11 weeks. And that has just been far too many cases, but that's about what we expected with this virus in late fall, early winter. And over the last week, we've seen many of the metrics, many of the data points we look at show some heartening improvements. So fewer hospitalizations, fewer cases increasing at a rapid level. And we had 10 days in a row for the first time since July without any deaths from COVID. So big changes. So today, as of this afternoon, we have 9,470 cases. We expect to hit 10,000 somewhere around Valentine's Day, which is about a week longer than that every 13 days reaching 1,000 cases. So we're very happy about that, Rachel. Thank you for asking.
And the county, Lane County Public Health, recently opened up a web portal for people to sign up to be alerted when their turn comes to get the vaccine. We heard yesterday more than 75,000 people entered the database on the first day. Now, what does that tell you, Dr. Ludke?
Well, there's a lot of interest out there, and that was an amazing amount. We had 70-some thousand by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, which is really quite amazing. It also says that the people that built that website for us were pretty good. We had a crash later that wasn't related to the structure of the website. It was related to something else, a different pipeline, a bandwidth issue, if you would. But long story short, we do want people who will be vaccinated in the coming days. They haven't been one of the priority groups so far, to go to the lanecounty.org website, and you'll see a variety of forms there. The third form down is English, and the fourth one down is Spanish. And fill those forms out and submit them, and you will be contacted as more vaccines come on board. And we really want to encourage people to start doing that.
And it is a pretty easy process, I have to admit. I did it myself yesterday.
Wonderful. Glad to hear that.
So, Superintendent Skirto, can you share what Lane ESD's role has been in helping to coordinate vaccine distribution to educators and school staff in Lane County?
Sure, Rachel. First of all, I want to say that this is only happening because of the partnership with Lane County Public Health, because we have probably around, we think, 12,000 to 13,000 educators in Lane County. And of those, about 8,500 are public school educators. The others are child care workers or private school educators. And so Lane ESD's role is to take the public side with our 16 school districts where those 8,500 educators work, and communicate with Lane County Public Health and take that information and, you know, send that out to all of our 16 districts, and with cooperation of those 16 districts, figure out what is the best way to distribute those as rapidly as we get them, or as soon as we can get them into arms, so that we can be ready for the next supply when it comes. So our role has been to kind of be the facilitator, convener, communicator for the public side. Lane County Public Health has stepped up to kind of organize and communicate with the private schools and the child care folks.
So how, where are we at in the process? Can you give us sort of an update? Because it sounds like a challenging task.
It is, and I would say the biggest challenge from here on is probably out of our control, and that's the number of doses we get. I think we've done a really good job. Our districts have done a really good job cooperating with the doses that we've been given. They've set up clinics, six of them throughout the county. And in those the 16 districts have all cooperated so that it's not just the districts who are running the clinic who are getting the doses. It's shared with the middle-sized and smaller districts as well. So we're really proud of that cooperation, and I was encouraged to hear that the state of Oregon should be getting more doses because we're going to need more. Right now, just rough count, probably 40% of our educators, it could be a little more, but about 40% of our public educators have been vaccinated, or I should say, by Tuesday, will be vaccinated with the first dose. And so, and we just heard, unfortunately, that for next week, even though there's maybe more doses coming down the road, next week it's fewer, about half than what we had this last week. Well, even less than half of what we had this last week.
Now, the reason that the governor put educators in the priority group for vaccinations is to help facilitate getting in-person instruction back for K through 12 students. Can you let us know kind of what schools are doing in terms of reopening? Some of them, I think, are already doing some in-person instruction. Others are looking ahead to try to do that in some manner.
Yes. So, again, with 16 school districts in Lane County that vary in size, I think our smallest district has about 150 students all the way up to Eugene 4J with, I want to say it's 17, 18,000 students around in there. I could be a little off on that number, but definitely far bigger than our smallest. And the factors that go into the size of the school and also where the school's located kind of allow for a school maybe to open more safely than in another area. And again, in the partnership with Lane County Public Health, not only do we get information about the spread throughout the entire county, but school districts get a glimpse of data of what's happening within their school district boundaries. And with that, some schools are able to, you know, take a look at that data and make decisions on opening, which is probably a pretty safe decision, and others it maybe wouldn't be the wisest thing to do. All districts are bound by kind of statewide metrics that are out, and that would indicate kind of when the spread is too high to really be in person, and when it's low enough to make sense to be in person. But we have had a couple of districts that started kindergarten through third grade hybrid back in September. This would be Lowell and Pleasant Hill School District, and they've been able to operate successfully from that time till now with really no stoppages and no cases. They've been doing it safely. So that's kind of the those who got in early enough. Shortly after they opened, the metrics wouldn't allow for anybody else to open for a while, but now we're in more of an advisory mode. Schools can choose to open, and what we're seeing is, again, many of our middle-sized and smaller districts. In fact, just this week, we had several of those open up to K-3 instruction. And I'm saying K-3, I mean kindergarten through third grade. The kind of the priority group in coming in person has been that group, just because those students tend to be the ones that aren't doing as well on the comprehensive distance learning. And the skills they need to master are best mastered when they're actually in person. So that's kind of the priority in the younger grades. What's also interesting, and I was just talking with Dr. Ludke in the hallway before this about the notion that those folks who are kind of venturing into the in-person instruction really understand how strict the safety guidelines are. Never before that I can think of have we had schools where there's actually somebody at the door screening to make sure nobody gets in who even has a slight sniffle or a cough. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a straight COVID symptom, but it creates a space where students are following the rules, wearing masks, social distancing. And again, it's also paying attention to those safety guidelines, but at the same time paying attention to what the overall spread looks like in that particular school community. And that's why we don't just have one uniform back-to-school date and back-to-school procedure.
Well, we did have a question regarding the safety of reopening schools. I'm going to play this voicemail for you, and maybe you can talk a little more about how you're doing this in terms of safely reopening. Just one sec.
Hi, this is Marsha calling from Yahat. Will one of your guests please explain how vaccinating teachers will enable schools to reopen safely? No doubt all students are suffering and some more than others. And those kids should have extra help. But the students are not vaccinated. The parents are not vaccinated. Neither the grandparents, the extended families, friends, neighbors, nor the general population. I usually support Governor Brown, but I'm afraid her policy on schools is short-sighted and half-baked. Your comments?
Thoughts from either one of you?
I'm happy to start. What I would say is we have a fair amount of data on the clinical epidemiology side that schools can open safely. They do need to follow the standard infection control guidelines that we have been talking about now for, 10, 11 months. There are very good studies reported in good journals. They were peer-reviewed. People looked at the data and looked at the structure of the study in school systems in Mississippi, in North Carolina, in Wisconsin, and showing that these schools opened. Some were K through 12. Some were the elementary school ages. And their disease rates were much less in schools than they were in the community. So it can be done effectively. We also have studies. Israel, for example, is the classic one that I suspect many on this radio show have heard, where they opened without those safety mechanisms in place. Masking was not good at all in the country of Israel back last spring. They did not have good social distancing. They also unfortunately had a heat wave at the time, and they had recycled air with air conditioning, and everybody was indoors with windows closed, and they had huge outbreaks within 10 days of when their schools opened. So we learned from that. And the systems of being put in place with fidelity for the epidemiology part, we can make this happen. And then adding vaccine is another level of safety. One other point before I turn it to Tony for his views, we have a good deal of epidemiology data showing that in general, kids are not driving these outbreaks. It's staff and teachers. Yes, kids can get sick. We know that. And a tiny number of kids can get severe disease, that multi-system inflammatory syndrome that you've probably heard about in kids. But it's one in a million or less for little ones. But our community disease burden and outbreaks are driven not by the kids, but they're driven by others, young adults and the rest of us adults. Tony, what are your thoughts?
So I'm glad you mentioned all the studies because we're getting that same information from the Oregon Department of Education that's partnered with the Oregon Health Authority in terms of what, that students aren't spreaders and that it's a fairly safe environment if you follow those safety protocols. And I mentioned screening at the, screening before entry. That's one of them. Masking, you mentioned. Social distancing. I mean, when we think of school, most of our school experiences from our own, memories are probably, crowded hallways. And we hear teachers talking about overcrowded classrooms. We get too many kids in the class. We'd love to lower that. But in what we're talking about here, we're talking about a very limited number of students. If it's a hybrid, what that means is there are students, maybe half or a third will go on one day, the next third on another day, and the next third on the other. So it's not full on back in school 100% of the time for kids. It's still a hybrid model where they at least get some in-person instruction. And that's because of the safety guidelines don't allow for an entire classroom to be there at the same time. So those are extremely important that when districts are following those and looking at the studies from outside in other countries and throughout the rest of the United States is important. But we've got some, kind of anecdotal things happening here within the county. And I mentioned the two districts that opened in September. There's been no spread within those two school districts with those students in school. The upper grades are also coming in, but in very what we call limited in-person instruction. We have a lot of acronyms in education. It's called LIPI. So a lot of districts are operating in LIPI, and that is, again, even smaller number of students keeping the spread, keep masking spread, still with the screening, and also time limits and how much time they're in. So when we talk about coming back into school right now, even with the vaccinations, we're still talking about all the safety protocols and a whole different – the school looks a lot different than what you can imagine, crowded classrooms and crowded hallways.
You're listening to the Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. We're talking with Lane County Public Health's Dr. Patrick Ludke and Lane ESD Superintendent Tony Skurdo. We got some other questions from listeners, and we're try to fit as many in as possible. Dr. Ludke, we mentioned that website for signing up for the vaccine, But what if you're not tech savvy? We got this voicemail.
How do people, like my husband and I, get signed up for the COVID shots? We don't have a computer, email, we don't have smartphone, we don't live in the technical world. Everything is online for COVID. The rollout to pharmacies now, sign up is online. My husband is 85 with health issues. I'm 73 and his caregiver. When I ask his doctor, they say to monitor the websites for information. When I make calls to the health department, I don't get a straight answer, but I'm told information is online. We need some help. What do we do? I'm sure we're not the only ones out there that do not have access to a computer, and we're not computer savvy people.
Well, Dr. Ludke.
Yes, and I will clearly say that we are aware of this. And if in any way she and her partner are able to use someone else's computer, go online, go to lanecounty.org, click on that form. Sounds like English is her language of first choice, and fill it out. And when it comes to the part where there's a computer or email address, don't put that down, but put your cell phone or your home phone, and that's how we will connect to you. If you don't have that ability in any way, you don't frequent the library or one of your friends or neighbors doesn't have one of those, we do have our phone lines that you can call us at. She called you with a message, so she can call us and leave a message at the health department at our 1380 number. It's 541-682-1380. And that number has been overwhelmed on occasion, not lately, but we prefer, if she can, to do it online, partly because she will be typing in the exact birth date, all the exact information, and you know how it is when you do things verbally. Sometimes transcription errors occur. So we offer both of those, and it will work, and I will ask her to have a little bit of perseverance, but we're trying to make sure there's both ways. There's both the phone way and the email, computer-driven type of way.
And we had a couple questions about people who wondered, okay, if I get the first dose of the vaccine, how will I know to get the second dose? Can you explain kind of how it works when someone does go to one of these vaccine events?
Yes, indeed. So again, we will send out to persons who sign up today, they'll give us hopefully an email and a cell phone. We will email them a notification of when the second dose will be. And we will, for some people who maybe don't have email, we'll send them a hard copy letter. We send out a lot of letters. We have people sending out letters, folding them up and putting in envelopes every day. And they will receive that. If they're only available via phone, they will be called. And they will say, if you got Pfizer, your second dose is 21 days after the first. And we really want people to start thinking about where they're going to be 21 days from the day they get their vaccine. Hopefully they're not going to be out of the state. And if they got the Moderna vaccine, their second dose is 28 days after that vaccine. So be thinking about where you are, but you will be contacted by us either by a phone call or a letter or an email. And you get to choose which one of those is best for you. But please make sure you fill out those forms completely so we can locate you.
So we got an email from Jenny in Eugene. She says, my husband is fully vaccinated, and I will be fully vaccinated as of the end of the month. We're planning a road trip out of state for spring break. It's the first trip we've taken since the pandemic began, and our plan is to drive and stay in an Airbnb with just our immediate family. Our kids are 13, 17, and 18, and I'm wondering about when and if they should be tested for COVID-19, and should we plan to have them quarantine before and or after the trip?
Well, those are really good questions. So what I would say, first of all, for the adults, the parents, no vaccine is perfect, and the vaccines that are available now are 95% and 94.5% effective. But again, that's not 100%. So the chances are very good that 2 weeks after your second dose, whenever that is, depending on which vaccine you got, you have achieved a really good immunity. But again, it's not perfect. So if you or your spouse are really at high risk and you start to get COVID-compatible symptoms, a fever, a cough, shortness of breath, it could still be COVID. It probably isn't, but it still could be. So be careful. The kids traveling, unless they're at high risk, they're not vaccinated, it sounds like, I think she said. Unless they're at high risk right now, they take the standard precautions, which would be the avoid large crowds, social distancing, wear a mask, clean high-touch surfaces, make sure they have hand sanitizer available. I don't know if they're flying or if they are driving. Maybe they're
driving.
They're driving, so they're not too far away. If they are in a car and someone is symptomatic, first of all, if it's COVID compatible, they shouldn't travel. This should not be the time where they attend this family reunion, even though mom and dad are vaccinated. You should either reschedule or, you know, politely say, sorry, I can't make it. I don't want to make it risky. So I think it can be done, a small group of five people. Testing ahead of time is not really recommended. You can be tested and you have a negative test, and no tests are perfect. And then between now and when you arrive, you get exposed and you could still spread it to somebody. And that test result was good that day, but it doesn't tell you much 3 or 4 or 5 days later. So I would not recommend pre-travel testing.
Okay. And, you know, the kids, as I mentioned, are ages 13, 17, and 18. And that does bring up another question, because at this point, I guess, you know, kids under 18 can't be vaccinated. Is that correct?
That's right. So right now we only have one vaccine that goes down to age 16. That's the Pfizer vaccine. But both of those first two vaccines are being studied right now for down to age 12. And they have just completed enrollment for their phase 3 trial. And I suspect in the next 60 days or so, we'll start to hear data from phase 3. There's really no physiological or immunological reason to think that the vaccines won't be effective in persons age 12 and up. So I suspect those studies will be positive. They not only will show effectiveness, but they'll show safety, and we'll have vaccines for use down to age 12. The lower ages are different. Your body is significantly different when you're a 6-8-year-old than when you're an adolescent or a young adult. So all bets right now are kind of off on those younger age groups, but there are studies in the 6 to 12 group and then younger than 6. So those are coming. It's just going to be a while before those vaccines are available.
Now, people want to help with vaccine distribution. Can you remind us how they can offer their services? Like, for example, if they're a retired nurse or someone with other skills that might be of help?
Oh, gosh, yes. And we really want their help. What they can do is they can send an email to covidvaccine@lanecountyor.gov, as in government. Again, that's covidvaccine@lanecountyor.gov. And we really do need vaccinators. Anyone who has been to one of our mass vaccination events, we have 12, 14, 16 aisles of cars, lanes of cars all next to each other. Imagine, you know, I-5 with 16 lanes. And the cars are coming in, and they stop at the first tent and the second tent and the third tent, and they wait their 15 minutes after the vaccine. And we need a lot of people to staff each of those tents. So please do volunteer.
Okay, we have just a minute left, and I hope this isn't going to be a challenging question, but someone asked, if they're inoculated with either the Moderna or Pfizer vaccine and then have to take a COVID-19 test to be able to take a flight, will the antibodies generated by the vaccine cause a positive test result?
In general, it's interesting, they're going to be flying. Yeah, some countries, some states want you to be proven COVID-free. The vaccines, both the two vaccines on the market now are spike protein vaccines, and you make antibodies against that spike protein. There are laboratory tests that are testing for other chemicals on the virus. So it would be important to make sure the right test is chosen. And what I would suggest is they tell who's ever ordering their lab test that I have been vaccinated, make sure to choose a test that tests something else. And the fancy words are, well, they're not so fancy, I guess. These two vaccines are spike protein vaccines, but we have other laboratory tests that test something like the nucleocapsid. It's a different protein that's part of the virus, and it tells you you're exposed and potentially immune. We don't know how well immune you are, but it can tell you that you've been exposed and made antibodies. So look for a test other than the one that is the spike protein.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks to Dr. Patrick Lidke, Senior Public Health Officer with Lane County, and Tony Skurdo, Superintendent of Lane ESD. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Happy to join you today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. Appreciate it.
We had production help from Angela Kellner. I'm Rachel McDonald. Enjoy your weekend.